Former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor said this, and I quote, "Knowledge of our system of government is not handed down through the gene pool, but we have neglected civic education for decades, and the results are predictably dismal." She's exactly right. And then I want to cite the Annenberg Public Policy Center, which on September 12, 2016, released its annual Constitution Day Civics Survey. And the results were absolutely stunning. Only 26% of the responders were able to name all three branches of government. That's one in four can even name the three branches of government. And then there's the question of the rights guaranteed in the First Amendment. In this same survey, just one third said they could either name any of the rights guaranteed in the First Amendment or that they just did not know. So, ladies and gentlemen, what we have is a crisis of constitutional knowledge on multiple levels. But perhaps nowhere is this national ignorance more dramatic than this. And that has to do with our topic, God in government, Christ in the Constitution. And that is our discussion today. David New, I want to go to you. You say that Christ is actually in the Constitution. I'd love for you to explain what you mean by that.
Yes, I do say that, and there's no question that it's true. Of course, the reason why this issue is important is because the secularists, people who believe that God should not be part of our public life and public policy, and the values that God represents and the goodness of God, they argue that God, the word God, is not in the U.S. Constitution. Now, that technically is correct, and from that position, they say that the Constitution is indifferent about the existence of God, that we should make our public policy strictly separate and apart from any belief in God, that when we make public policy decisions based upon our belief in God, we are violating the separation of church and state, and we are violating the Constitution. None of this is true. It is true that the word G-O-D is not in the Constitution, but it is not true that God is not referred to in the Constitution. He most assuredly is. And in our third segment, I'm going to show you something from the U.S. Supreme Court that will demonstrate that. But right now, I want to go to a legal dictionary. A legal dictionary, and this is the most popular law dictionary that is sold in the United States. It's called Black's Law Dictionary. And if you kindly would, look at Article 7 of your Constitution, and it uses the phrase, Year of Our Lord. Year of Our, O-U-R, Lord. That is very, very significant. Very significant. That phrase, Year of Our Lord, is a direct reference to Jesus Christ. In 1915, the Louisiana Supreme Court issued an opinion called the Herald case, and they identified that reference of Year of Our Lord in the U.S. Constitution as referring to Jesus Christ. So here's this secular document that doesn't have the word God in, that allegedly was intentionally kept out of the Constitution, and here it is actually where Jesus himself is referred to. Now the secularists, they have a way of getting around this. They say, well, that's just a formality. That's just a trivial matter. It doesn't really mean anything. And I will show you in the next segment why that's not true. But right now I want to go to a law dictionary. Modern law dictionaries don't go into the depth that the old ones did. Here's one from 1910. It's issued by Henry Campbell Black. Today it's called Black's Law Dictionary. When I went to law school, before I began classes, I went to the school store and bought a copy of Black's Law Dictionary. And here's what it has to say about this phrase in the year of our Lord. It says, Anno Domini, in the year of the Lord, commonly abbreviated A.D., the computation of time, according to the Christian era, dates from the birth of Christ. So here we have allegedly a godless document that in Article 7 refers to Jesus Christ. Here's another dictionary called the Dictionary of Terms and Phrases Used in American and English Jurisprudence. And of course, this document tells and defines Anno Domini. It says, and here it identifies that the nations that use this term, Year of Our Lord, are Christian nations. This is what it says, quote, in the year of the Lord, This phrase is commonly prefixed to the number denoting the year of the Christian era, thereby distinguishing that computation of time, which is adopted by all Christian nations, reckoning from the birth of Jesus Christ, from other modes of computing time. End of quote. So here we have two legal sources. The one I just read to you was published in 1879. And here we've got two legal sources that clearly identify year of our Lord as referring to Jesus Christ. Well, how can you have a secular, godless document with a reference to Jesus Christ right in it? That does seem to be a problem. It would upset me if I was a secularist. How do you live with something like that? How do you get around something like
that? Well, I think this is the thing that we need to take into consideration, David, and I want to ask a question about that in just a moment. But it's interesting that as you're talking, one of our network station managers, Danny Melanie, has just brought this to my attention through text. He says kids in the public school are not being taught cursive, hence they may not be able to read and understand the Constitution. And he goes on to say that he wonders if that's not a liberal agenda to try to keep people away from the Constitution, that is, not being able to read cursive. We don't really understand entirely, perhaps, or don't know fully, perhaps, what the liberals are doing, the secularists are doing, to get our thoughts away from what this Constitution of ours, this great Constitution of ours, is all about. But let me just go on and say this, that, you know, probably everyone listening to us today have heard that secularist argument that the Constitution is a totally secular document. And my question, David, is this. When did that lie get started, and how has it been so effectively perpetrated over the last number of years?
The idea that the Constitution is godless is not a new idea. When the Constitution came up for ratification, there were about 1,700 delegates who voted on the Constitution, whether to ratify it in the various states or not, but around 1,700. There was a very, very small number out of that group, not even 20, maybe 10, somewhere around there. A number of people who said, why doesn't the word God appear in our Constitution? It should. Now, that's a very small, it's not even 1%. Now, as time progressed, the president of Yale University, Timothy Dwight, he attacked the Constitution because the word God was not in it. So it's not a new idea. But it didn't take on the importance until the theory of evolution came along. Then it really had a different meaning because even though Timothy Dwight, for example, attacked the Constitution for not having the word God in it, and of course people who make that argument are saying, well, it's a godless document, so how can America be a Christian nation? He himself, Timothy Dwight, even though he attacked the Constitution for not having the word God in it, he acknowledged that America is a Christian nation. And one of the reasons why the phrase, in God we trust, is on our money and appeared during the Civil War, was in reaction to some people who were uncomfortable with the fact that the word God was not in the Constitution. The majority of Americans were never there. They always felt that the Constitution did honor God. There was a minority who felt that way, a small minority, but a very vocal minority. But once the theory of evolution comes in, then it very much takes on a different character because it's no longer attacking the Constitution as being godless, but it's attacked. When they say without God, they mean anti-God, and that is a very different type of thing.
David, let me ask you this. Would it not be accurate to describe the Constitution this way, that the framers were operating from a presuppositional apologetic, and that presupposition was this, that this is a Christian nation, and they had a knowledge of the Bible, and because they had that presuppositional apologetic and understood the influence of Christianity on the country, they weren't trying to prove anything in the Constitution. They just assumed this is the frame of reference from which we're operating. So the assumption was already there that this is what this country is, And that's what this Constitution would represent. Would that be an accurate way to describe it?
That would be inaccurate. To the framers that were in Philadelphia, to the 39 signers of the Constitution, and over about 55 attended, but about 39 signed it. To those people, they did not see, by not including the word God, they did not see that as having the significance that it does to a group like the ACLU. They did not see that because they were basically reared in Judeo-Christian values. Without question, they believed in Christian America. You know, this is one of the most incredible things. When you listen to secularists, they think the people who believe in Christian America are really dumb people. Whatever happened to history? You can go into the history books and you will see it repeated over and over and over in Congress all throughout that this is a Christian nation.